in the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man. Finally, whether you are citizens of America or citizens of the world, ask of us here the same high standard of strength and sacrifice which we ask of you. With a good conscience, our only sure reward, with history the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, asking his blessing and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own.
All of you who are here tonight, all who put so much heart and soul and work into this campaign, you can be the new majority who can lead this nation out of a long political darkness. Democrats, independents, and Republicans who are tired of the division and distraction that has clouded Washington, who know that we can disagree without being disagreeable, who understand that if we mobilize our voices to challenge the money and influence that stood in our way and challenge ourselves to reach for something better, there is no problem we cannot solve. There is no destiny that we cannot fulfill.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to AJC Radio, where we bring the message of justice all around the world. And tonight, folks, it is Spotlight on Capitol Hill. And I'll tell you what, you may want to break out some flags. We say this from week to week. But I'll tell you right now, hold on to your seatbelt, folks, because tonight we shine the spotlight on Mr. Ron LeGrand from Washington, D.C. And he's not a congressman or a senator, but he has set precedence, if you will, that tonight we highlight one who has made an impact not only in our nation's capital as the chief judicial counsel to the Committee on the Judiciary for the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. And folks, make no mistake about it, he's a heavy hitter just like the rest. Hang on to your seats. AJC Radio ascends on the steps of the nation's capital. This is Spotlight on Capitol Hill Thursday. Hang on. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you have your travel arrangements made, because we are coming from our nation's capital, but we are in Colorado Springs. However, tonight we ascend on the steps of the Capitol and on Capitol Hill, and with our members of Congress and people who are shaking up a nation. And Ron LeGrand is one of those folks tonight. And welcome to the program. I'm Lamont Banks, along with Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, and Jeanette Williams. And how are you folks tonight?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Doing great, Lamont.
All right. And, folks, if we sound a little excited, Red Bull has nothing to do with it.
Yes, it
Five-hour energy has nothing to do with it. But I'll tell you right now, Lisa, as we were saying before, Cliff, Jeanette, we have seen some huge responses from Spotlight on Capitol Hill. You know, when you're on the phone and working in a call center, I've done that years ago, and they used to say there were calls in queue. Well, we have members of Congress in queue that are in line to come on Spotlight on Capitol Hill. Lisa, this is getting more and more exciting every day, isn't it?
Oh, it's getting up there. I never would have expected that kind of response. And people are just, they're calling us wanting to know, hey, when can we get scheduled to get on that show?
Absolutely. And you'd have to walk the steps and the hills of Washington, D.C., and Cliff probably went through a couple of pair of shoes making his way up to the Capitol. Cliff, we have done some work here along the way. How good is it to feel that, you know what, our congressmen are interested. Our people in Washington who are making decisions, Texas Congressman Reagan, when he said it's time that the folks ask the right people the right questions. I think AJC Radio is stepping out and doing that tonight.
Absolutely. You know, the one statement that has continued to be spoken by the members of Congress as we interview them and talk to them is how much they appreciate that we are bringing the message to the masses, to the people, that tells what Congress is about. Not just, okay, here's something that happened bad in Congress, here's some hot topic on Capitol Hill, but this is what Congress is doing. This is bringing the information, how they come to the conclusion on what laws should be made. And from the position,
sure,
of the members of Congress that we're talking to, is that this is appreciated by them.
It really is.
That Just Cause Radio is basically doing this for them, and we appreciate their time as well.
Absolutely, and without question, no matter what the weather is outside, AJC Radio continues to heat up, and the temperatures continue to rise as we take a look at our America's best folks, we believe, who have the answer of coming together, working together to bring about change. And that happens with the folks that take office. And you heard the clip at the beginning of the show with JF Kennedy saying, don't ask what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Jeanette, how important is that for people to have that mindset as we get ready to, as whether you're an advocacy group, whether you're a congressman, whether you're just an American citizen sitting on the couch tonight enjoying the freedoms in which people have died for, how important is that? What can we do for our country? How important is that?
We got to get involved. It's very important, Lamont, because as many say, you know, you can't complain about a system if you're not getting in there and doing your job, letting your voice be heard to be a part of it. So, very important.
Good deal. And we said before on this program, if you went to English class 101 in 8th grade, 7th grade, there were two pieces of thing you learned while you were in class. One of those were what was a noun and what was a verb. A noun kind of just stood at the beginning, if I'm not correct, of a sentence. Is that correct? Is that correct, folks?
Yes.
Any English majors out there, is that correct?
I'm not one, but I think so.
All right, so you have a noun and then you have a verb. What was the verb meant?
The verb is
action.
The action word.
The verb is what's moving. Ladies and gentlemen of America, it is time that we as American people become verbs. And Spotlight on Capitol Hill, we are recognizing verbs in our nation and folks that are doing something and not just standing still. We are advocates for justice. And until we get involved and begin to move, nothing's going to change. And that's something that's very, very important that we must pay attention to. So just a little bit of information. Lisa, read our disclaimer to our listeners, please.
Okay, we just want to remind everyone that we are not attorneys and A Just Cause does not provide any legal advice. You'll want to contact your personal legal advisor for all of your legal needs. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests do not necessarily reflect that of A Just Cause or AJC Radio. And as always, we want to thank you for taking a little time out and spending time with us this evening.
And thank you for that, Lisa. We appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, grab a cup of lemonade. It isn't quite cold enough not to put the lemonade machine up quite yet. Go grab you some lemonade, perhaps some coffee, maybe a streusel, whatever fits your fancy, as we get ready to take a trip to our nation's capital. This is Spotlight on Capitol Hill Thursday. We're coming right back at you. Hang in there. Ladies and gentlemen of America, the month of October happens to be the National Domestic Violence Awareness Month, an issue that is crippling America, destroying families, and shattering homes. Today, we take a moment to reflect and to remember the victims of domestic violence. We want you to know there is a way out. Ron LeGrand in Washington, D.C., the vice president of the National Network to End Domestic Violence, has set out on a journey to execute change. That is about saving lives, saving mothers, saving daughters, saving friends from the cruelty of domestic violence. We ask that if you have any issues, please call the domestic violence hotline at 1-800-799-7233 as we heal the wounds of domestic violence as a nation. AJC Radio takes a moment to remember the victims, and our fight will always continue. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. This is Lamont Banks along with at AJC Radio along with Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, and Jeanette Williams. And tonight, we take a moment to say thank you to our listeners for joining us on each and every program. We appreciate you. Tell your family and friends and everybody that you know that AJC Radio is delivering a message and bringing the message of justice all around the world. And as we get started, Lisa, we had the opportunity, Cliff and Jeanette, we had an opportunity to sit down with a what I call a legend in Ron LeGrand, and an outstanding young man that is doing things, Lisa, that not only affects Washington, D.C., but is affecting the nation as a whole. Not only what he's done on Capitol Hill over 30 years, but what he has done now in his current role as the vice president of the National Network to End Domestic Violence. Lisa, when we talked to him, there was one thing that was very clear. He had a heart for change.
Yes, absolutely. He's very passionate about what he's doing for people who are dealing with domestic violence. I mean, it's a horrible situation to be in. It's something that you're not going to understand it if you don't live it, if you don't walk that road. You're not going to ever understand it. But it's good to have people out there that are walking with you and being that hand extended to help you get through what you have to get through in that kind of situation.
No, absolutely. And he had a huge impact on us. And again, Lisa, that's just a very small piece, and not to make light of what he's doing now, but the impact he made in Congress.
Yes.
What he has done over the years there. And matter of fact, his position on the National Network to End Domestic Violence came as a result of a act that was signed by the President of the United States in regard to domestic violence. I'm going to let him get into that. But we had an opportunity to sit down with him, and we're getting ready to take you folks to that interview. Folks, hang on. This is interesting, and it is compelling. We introduce to you Ron LeGrand. Hello, Mr. LeGrand. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
We're doing well, Ron, and thank you so much. I'll address you as Mr. LeGrand for the purposes of this show, and with the esteem honor we show you today, and we appreciate you taking a few moments with us. And know this, Mr. LeGrand, you are the first non-congressman, or non-senator, that we have chosen to appear on Spotlight on Capitol Hill, and that is because of the impact and your experience, your history, and your commitment in public service at our nation's capital. And we appreciate you taking some time with us today to join us. And we're glad that you're here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I wasn't aware that I would be the first non-member of Congress to appear on your program. That is indeed an honor, to say the least, and very humbling. I know of some of the members of Congress in both the House and the Senate whom you have had on your program, and people whom I am very much in awe of and hold in very high esteem. and I might add, members from both sides of the political aisle. So thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, and thank you, Ms. LeGrand. First of all, we'd like to ask you a little bit about that. We are, as you know, in a position in this country facing some, and before I go there, Ron, Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, is also joining us in this interview. Say good morning, folks.
Good morning, Mr. LeGrand. How are you?
I am fine, Ms. Stewart. How are you today?
I'm doing great.
And, Ron, it's good to talk to you again. You know, we appreciate you taking a little time out of your day to join us here on Spotlight on Capitol Hill.
Well, again, thank you so much.
Okay, and as we go forward, Ms. LeGrand, we, as you know, and we're going to get into, and ladies and gentlemen of America, make no mistake about it, Mr. LeGrand is involved with something that is very touching and very serious on the radar, if you will, of the American people dealing with domestic violence. He currently serves as vice president for public policy on the National Network to End Domestic Violence. And we're going to get into that, Ms. LeGrand, a little bit later. But we're also going to go into what you have seen in Washington through your years of being there. We said before on Spotlight on Capitol Hill is that there's a negative reflection or negative perception, if you will, that the media at times will give congressmen and senators. You don't hear a lot of positive things in most cases. It's something that may be controversial, something that may be and it's very short-lived. It's not any long period of time to address anything that's positive for the most part. Spotlight on Capitol Hill is about one thing, and that is shining the light on members of Congress, people in the Washington, D.C. area, people who have done things, who have impacted not only Washington, but because of the policies and the things that members of Congress do, the things that their efforts, their passions, it trickles definitely down to the entire United States of America. And that was the whole purpose. And you have had an opportunity and have been so honored to work with some of the members of Congress. And one point I'd like to point out, and I'd like you to share with our listeners in regards to the really heart-driven concern of members of Congress that you witnessed personally, dealing with criminal justice reform, dealing with over-criminalization, dealing with our prison population being what it is. What would you say, from your experience, are the things that are really important to the members of Congress that you've had the opportunity to work with, and how really committed are they to bringing about change regarding this topic?
Lamont, thank you so much for asking that question. I have to tell you that during my last 2 years on Capitol Hill with the House Judiciary Committee, I witnessed something that, frankly, I wondered if I would ever witness in my life, and that was the concern on the part of members of Congress from both sides of the aisle and folks from various advocacy organizations representing the left, the center, and the extreme right, coming to the realization that the last five decades of the tough on crime, lock them up and throw away the key. If you can't do the crime, don't do the time. This sort of hardened attitude towards crime and the response to crime. Members are realizing that those last five decades really haven't achieved what they thought it would achieve. Instead, what has happened is that we have ruined lives, we've ruined families and communities. We've also had overcrowded prisons. You know, most of the people in the country don't realize that the United States leads the world in prison population. That is, we have more people incarcerated in this country than in other countries that you would typically think of as being oppressive, Russia, China, you name them. We lead the world in that. And all of these people being locked up, it hasn't achieved what we wanted to achieve. All right? And too many of the people who are locked up are first-time nonviolent drug offenders. And so what I've witnessed over the last 2 years in the House Judiciary Committee, they formed the Overcriminalization Task Force because they realized the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. We needed to take a look. The members wanted to take a look at our criminal justice system and really get a deep sense of what is wrong and where we need to begin to make improvements. And this has not only happened on the House side, but it's also on the Senate side. As a result of the work of the House Judiciary Committee's Overcriminalization Task Force, earlier this year, Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner and Congressman Bobby Scott, Republican and Democrat respectively, introduced a bill called the Safe Justice Act, which calls for a number of reforms. And more recently, on the Senate side, a group of bipartisan group of senators led by Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley and this Assistant Democratic Leader Dick Durbin were among the senators who introduced the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act of 2015. Both pieces of legislation, Levant, are intended to begin to address the five decades that I've referenced, begin to talk about sentencing reform, begin to talk about, you know, alternatives to incarceration, you know, to begin to relieve the emotional and social and financial stress that locking people up has caused us.
Absolutely.
And I got to tell you that not only is this happening at the federal level, but it's also happening at the state level. There is an initiative called the Justice Reinvestment Initiative, which is funded by the Department of Justice and one of its private partners, I believe it's Pew Foundation. Approximately 30 states are involved in this, looking at alternatives to incarceration and understanding that the one-size-fits-all approach doesn't work. And by that I mean someone commits an offense, you bring them into custody. What we've done in the last 5 years is simply lock people up without bothering to determine whether there's an underlying issue. All right, and by underlying issue, I'm saying, is there a substance abuse problem? If there is, then that person needs to go to drug court and be, you know, receive treatment.
Right.
Is there a mental illness problem? Is there post-traumatic stress syndrome? All right. What we've done years and years is simply lock people up without bothering to ask that question. And because we don't ask that question, they're not diagnosed. Because they're not diagnosed, they're not treated. They spend years incarcerated, and then they're released, still not diagnosed, still untreated. And so what happens? They're going to reoffend because if there was an underlying issue, it was never treated. That's something that's encouraging to me. And I got to tell you, you know, there was a time that I only would have expected something like this to be supported by the more liberal side of Congress, largely Democrats. But now we're seeing folks left, right, and center on board, working together. Did you hear me? Working together.
Yes.
And making, you know, introducing this legislation. And there are some differences between the two bills, and I'm sure there are going to be more bills. But what's encouraging to me is that people are moving in the right direction in terms of criminal justice reform. And at some point, folks are going to sit down with these two, maybe more bills to come, and they're going to hammer it out. They're going to go in conference. They're going to work it out. And I am believing that there will be some meaningful legislation that will have the purpose of truly achieving some reform in our criminal justice system. You know, we also have to ask ourselves, you know, where someone is accused of committing a crime, and maybe it's not a violation of criminal law. Maybe it's administrative. Maybe it's regulatory. Is that an offense that is deserving of incarceration, or should there be some other punishment? Maybe a fine, perhaps. Perhaps a stiff fine. All right? We've got people who are doing time for regulatory offenses when, you know, perhaps a fine would have been the more appropriate response. Looking at the Bureau of Prisons population, we've got approximately 250,000 people incarcerated in the federal prison system, and more than half of them are in for drug offenses, and the majority, I'm talking 90%+, are first-time offenders. And then we have the issue of mandatory minimums, all right, which has taken away discretion on the part of judges, which don't allow judges to look at the particular individual, look at the facts of the case, and make an independent assessment based on that. No, we've taken discretion away from the judges, and we've said, if you committed this offense, and you know they do some kind of calculation that determines the weight and the purity, regardless of the fact that you may have only been a mule, a carrier, you're going to get mandatory minimum of 10 years. That's not right. We deserve better than that. We're a better country than that.
No, absolutely. And I remember being in Washington. We had an opportunity to sit in on a couple of hearings, and I believe it was Congressman Bobby Scott, if I'm not mistaken on that, was actually doing the initiative for mandatory minimums. He was very outraged, if I remember him correctly, very upset in regards to this type of keeping people in prison and throwing them in there and not even thinking twice about doing it. And I think your point, Mr. LeGrand, is taken very, very seriously, that this is something that, because it is such a hot topic, it is such an issue in this country right now, because people do not feel that true justice is occurring in America. They believe that there are other motives, there are other agendas that are going to this. And when it becomes your father, your mother, your sister, your brother, your husband, your wife, that is locked behind the walls of incarceration, people are talking now because it's starting to hit home. And I think that's so very important. To that point, Mr. LeGrand, let me ask you in regards to we've had an opportunity, of course, to be speaking in regards to solitary confinement. A lot of things going on Capitol Hill, fighting solitary confinement, calling solitary confinement inhumane. We did a show on this program, the cries of solitary confinement, the people that have suffered, I mean, serious harm as a result of being locked up in solitary confinement. And that goes to my point in regards to the BOP director, Charles Samuels, who basically was told and asked by Congressman Cory Booker in regards to solitary confinement. And Director Samuels, to be very blunt with you, blatantly lied and said it doesn't exist. And an outrage, of course, happened after that. We had prisoners talking about, wait a minute, I'm in solitary confinement. What is he talking about? Your thoughts, Ms. LeGrand, on solitary confinement, the harm that is done not only to those that have suffered through that type of harm. I know Congress is talking about it and have been. What are your thoughts on solitary confinement, and how must we change that?
The only rationale that I can see for anyone being subjected to solitary confinement is for the safety of that individual. And I think that should only be a temporary measure. I mean, if you've got someone who is incarcerated and it is, for some reason, that person's safety is in question, then, yeah, you put them in solitary confinement, but then you seek to relocate that person. All right? And if need be, relocate them entirely out of that facility. But, you know, the Eighth Amendment prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. And that's what solitary confinement is. Yeah. I can't think of any reason to put someone in solitary confinement for an extended period of time. It just makes no sense to me.
And if you know this, Ms. LeGrand, if you didn't know this, there are places and prisons, state and federal, where folks have been in solitary confinement for 3 years, 5 years, all the way up to 15 years, 20 years. We've heard those type of stories. And that, as you said, if it's something that somebody's trying to harm themselves, you take them there as a temporary, let's get him under control, and then what's the next step? Not to get him under control and throw him away there. That doesn't fix the problem, not by any means. And
I agree
with you on that point, and Congress, again, seems to be addressing that issue as well.
I want to go one step further with you on solitary confinement. Perhaps the worst example that we know of occurred in Louisiana, in the Angola State Penitentiary, where you had three men called the Angola Three, Robert King, Albert Woodfox, and Herman Wallace, were put in solitary confinement. And let's see, Robert King spent 29 years. Did you hear me? 29
wow.
years.
Yeah.
In solitary confinement. All right. The other gentleman spent equal amounts of time and even more. I think Robert King was the first to be released. Herman Wallace spent even more time in, and to the point that Amnesty International, a couple of years ago, called for Herman's release, and Congressman John Conyers, Congressman Bobby Scott, and some other members of Congress were among those who advocated for the release of the Angola Three. And Herman Wallace, now, Herman Wallace, and then these gentlemen, while they were in solitary confinement, did not get the kind of medical attention or medical care they needed. By the time they looked at Herman Wallace, he was about 71 years old. He was diagnosed with advanced liver cancer.
Right.
Did you hear me? He was diagnosed with advanced liver cancer. He was finally released in October of 2013. And there's this state's attorney down there who blocked every attempt to release these gentlemen. Herman was released October 1st, 2013, pursuant to a federal judge's order. The state's attorney re-indicted him a couple of days later, all right, after he was released. But Herman died 3 days after he was released.
Well,
he died.
And Mr. LeGrand, we actually, we used to do a segment called, you know, the exoneree moment. And Herman Wallace was our first exoneree moment. We had a couple of people who fought for his freedom. We actually spoke on the show. And it shows you the sickness of the system that you keep a man in solitary confinement for, you know, basically 30 years. And
right.
then
right.
you say he's terminally ill. Everyone says he needs to be released. And then the culture of the system there where he was incarcerated, when that state's attorney said, no, we want to put him back in, it shows the sickness of the culture and the American incarceration system that we should be ashamed to tell any other nation that this is the best system in the world, because you see so many shortcomings, you see so many, even beyond that, so many blatant laws being broken, human rights issues that are being violated, that we cannot consciously say that this is the best incarceration system in the world. It has failed on so many levels, needs to be revamped. And former Attorney General Holder, even before the nation stood and said, we have too many people who are sitting in prison for no good law enforcement reason. And then, you know, to go back to the point of Director Samuel's statement to say that the U.S. Bureau of Prisons does not and has never used solitary confinement is a slap in the face of to the intelligence and the integrity of the American people and all of us who have gone to a poll and voted and said that this is the will of the people, by the people, and for the people. to me, in my opinion, it was a slap in the face to us all for him to make that statement. And, you know, personally, I would like to see his prior statements brought back before Congress, weighed against that one and say, OK, at what point, when were you lying to Congress? When you told us that it did not exist, or you told us that you used it for specific reasons? But it's those things that, you know, we have seen members of Congress fighting for this reform for prison, the reform for sentencing, and it just really gives you a good feeling to know that there are people in Congress like you that, you know, your role behind the scenes and on the right hand of the different committees that you supported, our hat is off to you, because it is no small undertaking to be there to ensure that what they do from a legal aspect is right, and also from a moral aspect to continue to push to have what is right done, and we appreciate it, especially as a Just Cause. You know, we feel that you know, like I said, our hat is off to you for the things that you've done.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And Mr. LeGrand, the next issue I'd like to get your viewpoint on. I believe the push for criminal justice reform, for criminal judicial reform, prison, all of these things that folks are talking about now, I believe it became a major hot topic as a result of the events that have happened over the last several months in America. And that is the Eric Garner killing by police officers in New York City, Michael Brown being shot down, shot to death by Officer Wilson, and Walter Scott being killed. The names go on. Trayvon Martin's injustice that his family has suffered as a result of a rogue neighborhood watch, racist, in my opinion. These things have sparked major concerns by the American people, and I believe by Congress. Your thoughts on the pattern of killing? Not accidental deaths, not some, this happened. We're talking about, in my opinion, murder by law enforcement. What are your thoughts on bringing the law enforcement back together with community and demanding change as this continues to be a trend of murder? This is a serial of killings. What are your thoughts on that?
This definitely got to be, and I think that the Department of Justice's study on what happened in Ferguson is a good example of law enforcement going unchecked in Ferguson. It was more than just law enforcement. It was the entire, the majority of the folks who were put in place to govern and lead that city. You know, we had gotten away from community policing. We had gotten away from police developing a cooperative working relationship with members of the community that they are sworn to protect and serve. And, you know, I think we're moving these events that you've cited have really outraged everybody, not just folks in the black community, but everybody, because anyone can say, you know, it can happen to me, it can happen to mine. And so I'm not going to just stand by and watch this happen to one segment of society, one community. It can easily happen anywhere else. I'm pleased to see young people being active. The Black Lives Matter. When I look at what's going on, when I look at the rallies, I'm not just seeing black faces, I'm seeing a diversity of faces. And I think that that's what we need to have in order to get the attention of our elected officials, of our civic leaders. Everybody's got to understand that they've got some skin in the game, that their lives could literally be at stake, because all it takes is one poorly trained police officer, which is another issue.
Sure.
You know, I want to look at, you know, how are these police officers trained? We've seen some instances in which some of these police officers who were involved in these incidents, this isn't the first time. Or maybe they left another police department because of excessive force and violence, and they were able to get on to another. Where's the background investigation?
Right.
Where's the diligence in making sure that these people who will put on a uniform and carry a firearm really have the mental and emotional capacity and stability that's needed to interact and to, you know, work with people of diverse backgrounds? I'm curious as to what kind of training the officers who were involved in these incidents, what kind of training did they go through? I know that when I became a special agent with the Drug Enforcement Administration back in the 70s, I went through very extensive background investigation. They interviewed everyone I had gone to school with, everyone, people I had grown up with, people who were my neighbors, to make sure that I was fit to carry the badge and wear a gun. And then put me through some very rigorous physical and mental training. Now, this is back in the 70s. I'm hopeful that the training's even more rigorous now, 4 decades later.
No, absolutely. And I think what your point, Ms. LeGrand, is clear. This outrage is trickling down, like you said. It's crossed racial lines when you see blatant murder, blatant death. Mm-hmm. And I think I made the statement before, when it comes to police officers, you know, there was a time that I remember tasers as an alternative to killing somebody. And they asked Officer Wilson, where was his belt with his pepper spray and his taser? Oh, I didn't feel like putting it on that day. So you leave yourself nothing but one alternative if confronted with a conflict, and that is death. That is murder. Then that is, in my opinion, premeditated murder.
Which goes back again to the training, because if you're trained properly, you know that you don't go out of that precinct or whatever your office is without being fully equipped. I bet you they put on their bulletproof vests.
No.
I'm sure of that. I know they don't leave without their firearm.
Oh, so
why not take your taser or your pepper spray and your pepper spray?
Yeah.
And now we've got the police-worn body cameras, which I think is a good thing.
Right.
I think it's a very good thing. I think that it is one more thing that will go to accountability, that will make everyone aware that they are on camera. Now, this is new technology, and the policies are still being developed. I know that. All right. But what I've said to folks, be involved in the conversation with your local police department. Make your voice heard. All right. Because there are a lot of issues. There are a lot of questions that need to be addressed with these body-worn cameras. But I think that they're good. And the Justice Department has made, I think it's somewhere in the area of $20 million available to state and local police departments for the purchase of body cameras.
No, and yeah, so you know what? I know there was something. There was actually, we found, Ms. LeGrand, some states actually opposing and passing laws forbidding the implementation of body cameras. Which
I can't imagine why.
And the only reason, the only thing I can think of that leads me to believe is that the corruption has gone so high that I say this all the time on this program, that when culture is implemented, it is iron brass. It's very difficult to change it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the culture in police departments across this country have developed such a stronghold of inappropriate conduct. Not all of them, but some of them have incorporated that at such a high level, it is almost impossible, at least in their viewpoint, we're not going to change that. And for the fact, like you said, for people to oppose the implementation, and you got legislators, state legislators, opposing such a thing, goes to the bad condition that America is in right now and the mindset that America's in right now. So that's definitely to your point. Ron, I'd like to, if we can, go into what you are currently doing right now, as I alluded to earlier regarding domestic violence, which is such a huge challenge and battle to be fought. And no one better to lead the helm of that situation than you, in my opinion. Give us your thoughts on what you're doing right now, what your role is, and the importance of what you're doing now as you have moved to this next challenge in your life.
Thank you. Thank you. While I was still counsel with the House Judiciary Committee, I had a number of legislative issues, sexual abuse, stalking, dating violence, human trafficking. And then in the end of 2010, beginning of the year 2011, I inherited domestic violence as an issue. I inherited it from a friend of mine who departed from the House Judiciary Committee, and that went back to the ACLU, which she had previously been. And at that time, the Violence Against Women Act, which was initially passed in 1994, and it was introduced, by the way, it was authored by our current Vice President Joe Biden when he was U.S. Senator and Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. The Violence Against Women Act was passed in 1994-95, and every 5 years, this legislation, and along with others, needs to be reauthorized. It's passed, and it has what's called an authorization, and the authorization expires roughly every 5 years. And by that, it just means that there's certainly grants programs, funding that needs to be reinstated. But it's also an opportunity to look at the existing legislation and see if there are ways of improving it, making it stronger, making it better, making it more inclusive. And so the Violence Against Women Act actually expired in, I believe it was 2011, and we began meeting with a number of advocacy organizations, including the one that I'm currently with, the National Network to End Domestic Violence. And over the period of a year and a half, almost 2 years, we worked on reauthorization, and there are some things that we wanted to do to improve it. We wanted to improve it by making sure that tribal women were covered. And by that I mean that prior to this law being passed and signed into law in 2013, as a result of our efforts, prior to that, if a tribal woman was assaulted, beaten, raped on tribal land by a non-tribal man, tribal authorities had no jurisdiction over him.
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe that?
Wow.
Tribal authorities had no jurisdiction over him. All right. Oh, I didn't know that. We also wanted to make sure that members of the LGBTQ community would be covered and able to receive any services or benefit from any of the programs under this legislation. All right. And finally, we wanted to make sure that immigrant women who already had a number of protections, that they were able to retain those protections. You know, Lamont, sometimes a woman from another country sees an ad, you know, the mail order bride, whatever you want to call them, and she's attracted to what this guy, this U.S. citizen, is saying, all right? And she wants to come over and hopefully have a better life. But she finds out that the guy is a monster. He's abusive. He's beating her. He's enslaving her. All right? We wanted to make sure that a woman in that position had the protections, was able to seek the help of law enforcement, without fear of being deported, because that's one of the things that the abuser would do. He would say to her, you either take this abuse or I'm going to send you back.
Wow.
Right? And that's what he would hold over her head. And so too often women would just stay because they felt they had no alternative, which was not the case. But you get someone who is very persuasive, he's telling you that that is the case. Going back to the tribal, right? When we signed, when we were there to sign, to watch President Obama sign the Violence Against Women Act reauthorization into law in March of 2013, there's a tribal woman on stage with him, along with other advocates. And the woman came forward and she said that she had married a white male. And for the first 6 months, it was like a honeymoon. And then, almost as if you flip the switch, he became abusive. And he became really abusive. And on some occasions, after beating her, and they lived on the tribal land, he would pick up the phone, dial the tribal police, give her the phone and say, here, tell them what I just did to you. And she would tell them as best she could. Now, you got to remember, she's just been smacked around quite a bit.
Right.
And the response that she would get on the other side of the phone is, sorry, miss, there's nothing we can do.
Wow.
What is that? How can that be? Well, we've addressed that now. But we were able to address it with, you know, notwithstanding a lot of opposition by some members of Congress. What I'm going to tell you is that working with the National Network to End Domestic Violence and the other organizations, I saw their passion, their commitment, their determination to get this legislation passed. And one of the things that impressed me, Lamont, is that if I'm in a room with 30 or 40 advocacy groups and they're really representing different interests, some are representing tribal, some are representing LGBT, some are representing immigrants, some are representing something else, they came in at the beginning of these conversations with a commitment that they were going to stay together. They were not going to allow themselves to be divided, all right, and ticked off. So, you know, the immigrant folks weren't going to say, well, we're going to go, we'll give you what you want, and we don't care about tribal. No, they didn't do that. They all stayed together, and they took an all-or-nothing posture, all right? That inspired me. It really did. And, you know, the other thing that bothered me is that, again, in these meetings that I convened of the advocacy groups, too often I was the only guy in the room of 30, 40, 50 people.
Oh, wow.
And that, I couldn't understand why. It suggested that maybe some felt that domestic violence is a quote-unquote woman's issue, which, of course, it is not.
Right.
But, you know, between just what I learned working on the legislation and wanting to be one of the men, and there are men who are working on this, but wanting to be one of the guys who is saying, this cannot happen. Real men don't beat women and children. Love should never hurt. That's why I came on to the National Network to End Domestic Violence. And I got to tell you, I started on May 1st, and I am thrilled to be here. I love it. I love the work. I'm happy that I'm here.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I was in a domestic violence situation and knew and was in search for someone that can change status quo, if you will, of this particular society issue, I would not want anyone else but Ron LeGrand at the helm.
Thank you for doing that.
I think that's wonderful. And ladies and gentlemen of America, we're talking to Ron LeGrand, a champion, if you will, of justice, of human kindness, of human decency, of legislative levels of importance. And Ron LeGrand has shown that and continues in his work to make an impact, again, not only of the Washington, D.C. area, but this particular item, not only what he's already done, but when you're talking about domestic violence, believe me, I guarantee it is not limited to a state or a city. It goes to every state, every city, every county, every neighborhood. And tonight, a Just Cause, AJC Radio salutes Ron LeGrand. And Ms. LeGrand, the last item that we will discuss that I think is of huge importance, and we, you and I have had the opportunity during our trips to Washington, Lisa and Cliff, and we've had an opportunity to discuss, of course, the IRP6, which we've met, we've talked about them, the huge injustice that has happened to these men, and we fight for justice for these men. That would be Gary Walker, David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Clint Stewart, and Demetrius Harper. The IRP6, and we always salute them on this program. The show is dedicated to them as we fight for justice. And I see here on your resume, if you will, I'll use that terminology of your history, it says that you served on the Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, Homeland Security, and Investigations. I ask this question to you now, and we'll get into this dialogue. ISIS is a threat to the United States of America. We have senators and congressmen that have appeared on this show have stated there are cells. I believe it was Congressman Sensenbrenner that said they have confirmed there are cells for ISIS in every one of the 50 states in America. As we look at ISIS that threatens the homeland, yet we have the IRP6 who sit in federal prison, who actually hold the key to making that less of an actual event that would happen because of their dedication and their heroism to America and their patriotism to America. As we sit back and look at the stories, the reports of ISIS, the folks in America being converted, if you will, or recruited to this terrorist network, what are your thoughts, given your experience on the Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, Homeland Security, and Investigations? What is America facing right now? And then, second part of that question, how important it is that we set something in place to attempt to free the men that have come up with a solution to fix that problem? Your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, you've said it. ISIS is such a threat. We thought that Al-Qaeda was a threat. ISIS has overshadowed Al-Qaeda, in my opinion.
Yes, they
ISIS
have.
ISIS has succeeded in in infiltrating our country in terms of infiltrating the minds of some of our citizens in ways that I never imagined possible. I heard something, a news item a week or so ago. It talked about the number of people recruited to join ISIS from other countries, and the number, as I recall, of U.S. citizens who have been recruited is slightly less than 300, if I recall that number correctly. It's amazing that people would leave this country to go over there and destroy the country that they were born in, destroy the country that affords them rights and privileges that can't be found anywhere else. I'm baffled by it, frankly. As far as the IRP6, Lamont, you and I have talked about this case, and as a former federal prosecutor, I'm really hurt. I'm really, really disappointed at how this case was handled. First of all, this seems to me that if there was a case at all, it was a civil case.
Right.
If there was a case, if there was a case at all, it was a civil case and should have been handled such. which again goes back to overcriminalization.
Right.
It's the overcriminalization effort, both the House and the Senate. One of the things it is doing and is intended to do is to force our government, to force the Justice Department to look at cases and ask the question, is this a civil or criminal cause of action?
Exactly.
And proceed there. You got to ask that question at the outset.
Sure.
I think former Attorney General Eric Holder had it right. He talked about being smart on crime.
Mm-hmm.
He reached out to his federal prosecutors and told them, hey, look, you don't have to load up an indictment. You don't have to go for a grand slam. You know, be reasonable, be fair-minded. Understand what justice is about. We've lost that.
Yeah.
I got to tell you that, and I understand how it can happen, because I understand that too often, you know, investigators, agents are judged on the number of cases they initiated.
Mm-hmm.
And prosecutors may be judged, or may have been judged, by the number of cases they indict and the number of defendants are in that indictment and the number of years, the number of convictions and the number of years of incarceration. We got a whole mindset that needs to be changed. All right? And it's not going to happen overnight, unfortunately. But it needs to begin, and it needs to begin now. And it's really a time for the true leaders in this country to stand up, be seen, and be heard.
Absolutely.
To lead. That's what we need. Lamont, if I may, I want to say a few more things about the National Network and domestic violence.
Sure.
Okay. I haven't told you or our audience what NNEDV is. We represent the 56 state and territorial domestic violence coalitions. We're, in many respects, the advocacy of the domestic violence coalitions here in the capital of the United States. We work with members of Congress to on legislation such as the Violence Against Women Act, which I talked about recently. But we also do more than that. I mean, we're talking about domestic violence survivors. Very often what keeps a victim in an abusive situation, and you know, there are often times where people hear about an abusive situation and they ask, why does she stay?
Right.
Or maybe she left, but she went back. And they say, why does she go back? You got to understand that this is about control. And there are a number of ways in which that abuser can control someone. And one of them is financial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, absolutely.
One of them is financial. And there's also housing. But what we do is, working with our coalitions, we make sure that domestic violence survivors get the necessary training and information that they need in order to lead independent lives free of abuse. And so we have a strong economic empowerment and financial literacy program for domestic violence survivors. We work on improving media coverage of domestic violence cases, and we educate survivors and others about the state safe technology. You know, media and technology can be powerful tools. They can also be powerful weapons of abuse. And we work with domestic abuse victims to make sure that if they're going to use the internet, for example, that they do so in ways that protect them, ways that are safe. I just wanted to share that with you, and if people want to know more about the National Network and Domestic Violence, they can go online at nnedv.org.
No, absolutely.
Thank you for that.
No worries on that, Ron. That's very important. And ladies and gentlemen, you may be in a domestic violence situation tonight across America. I would recommend that you reach out to the organization that Ron LeGrand has just stated. And Ron, what's that? How can they? What web email or website can they go to get further information or to reach out to your organization?
The website for NNEDV is nnedv.org. Our main number in Washington is 202-543-5566. But I also want to give you another number. I'm looking for it now, the Domestic Violence Hotline.
Okay.
And they are a number that is called frequently 800-799-7233. Again, that's 800-799-7233. You can also look up the Domestic Violence Coalition in your specific state, and they can also help you. But again, feel free to reach out to us at NNEDV, call the number that I've mentioned, and we'll be glad to be of assistance.
Okay. And Ron, we will post that information on AJCRadio.com for the listeners. They'll have access to get that. This is absolutely remarkable. And I believe one point, Ms. LeGrand, that Cliff had in regards to the issue we just discussed in regards to the IRP6, and I think it's a brief question, but we're going to have you answer that, and then we're going to go ahead and wrap you up so you can go have lunch and do whatever it is that you do, because you've been so gracious to give the time that you've given, and we are very, very honored that you've done that. Cliff, what's your question for Ms. LeGrand?
Well, if I know you made the statement about, you know, if this was any case at all, that it would have been a civil matter. And just as a matter of information for the listeners out there, that and you as well, Mr. LeGrand, that the FBI actually sent a letter to one of the complainants in this case and said that this is a civil issue and we suggest you take it up in a civil court. And the part that gets me, you know, and I worked at IRP Solutions, and you know, I was there when this software was being built. And the part that really gets me about that is that then the judge in the situation, this Judge Christine Arguello in the 10th Circuit, does not take this information that was sent by the FBI saying this is a civil matter, deal with it properly. The judge does not ensure that the assistant U.S. attorney, Matthew Kurz, that he deals with it in the proper manner. At this point, when you're saying, okay, the FBI, who is supposed to be doing this investigation on this company, has come back and said this is a civil issue, and one arm of the FBI is not communicating with the other arm, and then you have this whole issue that's blown out of proportion, and these men end up in prison wrongfully, and you have the solution, and not just something that somebody says, hey, you know, I'm going to build something and see who likes it. This the software that IRP Solutions built was built from requirements by Department of Homeland Security. Now, I mean, everybody who's done any little bit of research, who's heard anything about the reasons that 9/11 was able to happen, the reason that the attack on our homeland was able to happen, was because of the lack of communication by these federal law enforcement agencies. So the Department of Homeland Security was brought about to say, hey, you guys, everybody communicate, get one system, get a consolidated system that obviously is secure. I know, you know, we don't want to just have a database that somebody can hack out there and get all of our law enforcement information, you know, out wherever in the world. But this is a secure, encapsulated system by all federal law enforcement. The DHS said this is what we need, and when it was brought to IRP Solutions and they fit the bill and came back and did the customizations, and then to have Homeland Security say, look, what you have looks good, we want to stand this software up, what will it take? A quote is given to DHS, and then 2 weeks later, the FBI raids the business, and then after the raid tells one of the complainants, oh no, this is a civil matter, you should take it up as a civil issue. But it goes to your point that these are the type of situations that when left unchecked, when they get out of hand, and when the culture of like the Denver U.S. Attorney's Office, when the culture is left to just say we do what we want to behind closed doors, that is where the abuse of the American people come in, and that is where we see the overcriminalization. We see the need for sentencing reform. We see the need for basically a review and an investigation by DOJ to say what is going on in the federal courts, that these type of situations, these type of quote unquote cases, can lead to men being incarcerated for 7 to 11 years. It makes absolutely no sense. And like you say, we have to keep pushing to get something done about situations like this.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Mr. LeGrand, I didn't know you were in the modeling business. We see here that the 2009 edition of Who's Who in the Black World, it was recognized by the Hill newspaper in 2012 as one of Capitol Hill's 50 most beautiful people. I had no idea, man. We have to have a fashion show of some sort when you get here.
Give us a few words on that on if you can.
Being nominated as the 50 most beautiful people there in our nation's capital.
Well, I got to tell you, when the person called me, I thought it was a crank call. Honestly.
Right.
I thought it was a crank call. The gentleman identified himself. I said, where are you calling from? He told me again. I said, give me an email address and a phone number. And he didn't give me a bogus email address, and the phone number worked. So I said, okay, tell me what this is all about. And you know what? I was aware of the fact that the Hill did this, but, you know, never in my life did I ever expect that this would come to me. It was a lot of fun, but you know what? I tell people that I hope that the folks who nominated me and voted for me on that, you know, voted more on my character,
right?
And what they believe I am, the person what they see in me, as opposed to any external superficial factor. We know that beauty comes from within, and all I can say is that I do my best every day to do right by people, to make a positive difference in the lives of as many people as I can, whether I can touch them directly or indirectly. And so I hope that that's where that came from.
No worries really on that. Mr. LeGrand, and if that's not the definition of beautiful, I don't know what is. And that is about impacting a life and making a difference, and you definitely fit the mold for that, and we appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen of America, Ron LeGrand, who gave us this time today, I'm sure as he is fighting for ending domestic violence, it was a huge step that he took time out of his day to join AJC Radio, that we felt it necessary to shine the spotlight on Capitol Hill, I believe, on a legend, a hero, and one that is one of human kindness to touch a nation. And that is Ron LeGrand, and we appreciate that tonight. And ladies and gentlemen of America, November, in the month of November, we have the honor and the privilege, not us personally, but we actually advocate for communities and community organizations that come out who are trying to bring communities together, and that would be Colorado Springs Fellowship Church. Mr. Ron LeGrand will be joining the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church for a Let's Talk forum that is sponsored by Colorado Springs Fellowship Church and Pastor Rose Banks. And Mr. LeGrand has agreed to the church for this community event to come out, and that is November 17th. He will be here in Colorado Springs, Colorado, to grace us. And as we are, again, Just Cause is advocates for anything that is pushing things as far as justice, community, positive things. We were made aware that Colorado Springs Fellowship is doing that, and so we send a personal invitation, and Ron, to anybody there in Washington and surrounding areas, media people that you may know, feel free to invite them out to take a trip to Colorado Springs, because I believe it's well worth the trip wherever you come across this nation to meet such an extraordinary man as Ron LeGrand. And Mr. LeGrand, we thank you for that.
Lamont, I thank you very much, and I look forward to joining you and your mom and everyone at Colorado Springs. And let me add also, just so that people know, month of October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So just be aware of that, and you know, if you get a chance, you know, look up the local domestic violence coalition, and maybe you can volunteer, maybe you can make a donation. There's so many people who are hurting and suffering out here, and any small act of kindness that you can do the local community will be greatly appreciated.
And Ron, we'll go a step further than that. We will put together a PSA that goes out to our listeners across the country for the entire month of October on our show. We will have a designated statement made regarding Domestic Violence Month in recognition of this, and we will also refer them for in regards to your organization and that you head that organization. We will honor that on every program for the month of October as we honor Domestic Violence Month. So if that's our way of showing and giving back as well. And we'll also put out that donations are available. So thank you so very much.
And thank you. God bless you. God bless all.
Okay. Take care, Mr. LeGrand.
Take care.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Ron LeGrand, a champion on Capitol Hill, one that has... and continues to make a difference. And he even stepped further, apparently being motivated by the Domestic Democratic Council and the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act of 2013 is what motivated him to take the head of this organization and do something with it. At least it speaks volumes, doesn't it?
It does. It does. I think there's a lot that people don't know about domestic violence, and I think it's honorable that he would take such a passionate stand for it and feel so strongly about taking care of that and making sure that, or doing his best to try to end domestic violence. I mean, it's something that's always been around. It's always been an issue. Hasn't always been at the forefront, always been talked about, but it's something that's always been there. And it's an issue that has to be dealt with. People have to deal with it, and women need to know where to go. They need to have a place to go, know who to talk to. That's a difficult thing a lot of times, and it's nice to have something like that with someone like Mr. LeGrand heading it up, just taking charge of it, and just who really cares about what happens to these people.
Absolutely, and voted again, Capitol Hill's 50 most beautiful people. we sounded a little comical with that, but I think he said it goes to, and I think, Cliff, it speaks not only, I believe they vote him as a beautiful person because of what he does. Not that Ms. LeGrand is not a fairly striking young gentleman, because he is that as well. But as he said, he would hope that it would be because of what he does and how he reaches out in the human spirit to make a difference. And I think that makes a big, big difference. Father of six sons, Ron LeGrand is a devoted community activist and an avid member of several community-based and fraternal organizations. And Ms. LeGrand holds a bachelor's degree and from Boston College, and he is the father of six sons. So he is aware of the importance of change and what needs to happen in a place we call America.
Right. His Juris Doctorate is also from Boston College as well. That's where his alma mater. And his teaching to get him to Capitol Hill to be able to be the counsel for so many of those committees there that he dedicated 30 years of his life. Wow. I mean, that's a long time, and he isn't finished yet. Like you said, he's the public policy president for the National Network to End Domestic Violence, championing that cause, and you can only commend him for it.
Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's the whole heart of Mr. Ron LeGrand, and we've just touched briefly on it. But tonight we take a moment and shine the light on a legend and a humanitarian that is impacting America. We shine the light on Ron LeGrand making a difference across this nation. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen of America, we find ourselves as a nation at a crossroad of decision. The decision that must be made in America is a very important one of many. The particular decision we face tonight as a nation is all lives truly matter. There has been an overall rise in the death and unexplained death of men, women, and children behind prison walls in our country. This is not only repulsive, it is unacceptable and can no longer be tolerated. We have prison officials in federal prisons, state prisons, that give excuse and make up reasons to deceive the American people. Do you have a brother, a sister, a mother, a father, a friend, a child behind prison walls in America today? If you do, please be very careful to hear what I'm about to say. The suicide rate in our prisons has quadrupled over the years. The unexplained deaths of our citizens and the never-ending words that suicide was the cause of death has run its course. Our latest victim of such deception is Michael Anderson from the Colorado Federal Prison ADX camp in Canyon City, Colorado. Prison officials stated unequivocally that Michael Anderson took his life. But according to the family, there were bruises and unexplained cuts on the face and the mouth of Michael Anderson. It cast serious doubt on the cause of death. Michael Anderson is one of thousands of people that we lose to our system every year. It is time that we ask the questions and we demand for answers. We plead to the President of the United States of America, President Barack Obama. We send a plea out to the Department of Justice, Attorney General Loretta Lynch. We send a plea to every member of Congress, the House, the Senate, Republican and Democrat, to say, not on my watch will lives continue to be lost. America, it is time that we stand up. As we look for a better tomorrow for our children, our children's children, these young men and women who occupy prison cells in America may have made a bad choice, may have made a bad decision, but if I remember correctly, that doesn't mean a death sentence is necessary. What are we going to do? If you have questions today, or you know of loved ones that are questionably dying behind the wall and you have suffered this injustice and you are looking for answers and someone to reach out, please contact the Just Cause today at 1-855-529-4252, extension 710. It is high time in America that our lives and the lives of our children and of our incarcerated mean something. Let's do the right thing. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is AJC Radio, Spotlight on Capitol Hill, where tonight we've taken a few moments to reflect on a man, a gentleman, and someone that's making a difference by the name of Ron LeGrand. And it has been a privilege tonight, and we give our very special thanks for him joining us. And the things, Lisa, Cliff, Jeanette, that he is doing down there in Washington is absolutely phenomenal. He's making a huge difference. And touching the lives of those that are major victims, and a major hot topic in this country is the cruelty and the absolutely ridiculous and horror of domestic violence and the things that go with that. And Lisa, when you hear him speak on those issues of what he's doing and the passion that he's having, what he's talking about doing that interview, this man has a heart for what's really affecting the American people. And not only with domestic violence, but everything that he saw in Congress in 30 years of working with members of Congress is just over the top. And I mean, it's something to really behold, isn't it?
It really is. He's really got a passion for the work that he does. And he works, he seems to have done a lot in his life and worked on in a lot of different areas, and which gives him a wide variety of things that he's able to do. And I think what he's doing now is great. What he's done, what he was doing when he was working on Capitol Hill, I think everything he's been doing has really been on top of it.
Absolutely. Jeanette, your thoughts on Ron LeGrand?
Yeah, and as Lisa mentioned earlier, he stands for issues that are not always at the forefront but need to be addressed, like how he's involved with the National Association to Stop Elderly Abuse and Exploitation and the fraud against senior citizens. I mean, how can this happen in the USA? I mean, you have to be a really low human being to abuse an elderly person.
Well,
and even his stance on prescription drug abuse, that's been an epidemic in this country for way too long. I mean, we're aware of the damage of some of what is done because of the fatal overdoses of, like, you know, the well-known notable names, Marilyn Monroe, Bruce Lee, people like Elvis. But the reality is, famous or not, no one is immune from stuff like that.
No, absolutely. I agree with that. Cliff, your thoughts on Ron LeGrand as we close out on that segment of the show?
Oh, yeah. Just like I stated during the interview, you know, he's a champion for justice, stood by the side at the right hand of so many on the, you know, the all these committees that he dealt with, namely the Committee on the Judiciary, Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, Homeland Security, and Investigations. And this having been a counsel to, you know, the House of Representatives and the Senate, I mean, it takes a special person to stay there for all that time, be willing to go through. It really lets you know that he has a heart for the members of Congress and a heart for the American people. That's why, you know, he gave that much of his life to it, and we commend him for it.
Oh, absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, again, we give our very special thanks to our guest tonight, Ron LeGrand, the vice president of the national organization to end domestic violence, making a difference. And not only that, his contribution to members of Congress, of the House Judiciary Committee, as well as the U.S. Senate. His resume goes on and on and on, but I'll tell you what, everything on there is absolutely must be respected, and we definitely honor Ron LeGrand tonight. On this special edition of Spotlight on Capitol Hill, Ron LeGrand, thanks for joining us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back on the other side of this break, what you didn't know about the RP6 story, that's coming next.
Government targeted, prosecuted, convicted, six executives in, held back evidence.
Come on.
Hundreds of pages, submitted manuscripts, court circuit, 10th district denying the writ of mandamus. Free the RP6, critical rights violations, scandalous. Their motivation is finished, they finish with major companies, the government, New York PD, test potential customers.
Come on.
Faith attempt to obtain funding from banks and angel investors with no success. That calm meld down, finance skeptics, so they hire staff and come to fill the gap with every attention to fulfill the contract, fill the deal when money come back. Everybody paid the bills, the wages, take care of all of that. No Friday, they got viable software, but you prepare them to those with nothing to offer. Prosecuted by the attorney's office before the FBI got to start investigating charges, skipping steps in the process, even barring the testimony of Andrew Averell, a witness who could tell why any staffing company that could do a dumb rash street credit check would stick out their neck if there was no prospect they could collect.
when they're reeling the net, it all relates to Harvey Silver Glade statements about the vagueness of federal law, due district chaos, A underscore just cause. Read at RP6.org, 347-205-9620, just blog. It's just us, but we don't gotta just talk. We can just march to the courts for the cause with one voice and just free them all.
Come on.
Ladies and gentlemen of America, what is going on when innocent men get locked away? Ladies and gentlemen, have you stopped to ask the question, where is justice? It's far away. The IRP 6, David Banks, Gary Walker, Demetrius Harper, Kendrick Barnes, Dave Zappolo, and Clinton Stewart have pondered that question for 3 years. Where is justice? What you didn't know about the IRP 6 case is the question. We will deliver those answers on our new segment, What You Didn't Know About the IRP 6. We will seek and search for justice. We will ask the tough questions. We will demand answers as justice lays idle in the streets of America. We look for the answer. What you didn't know about the IRP 6 case starts right now.
Well, on the morning of 2005, the day of the FBI raid, I remember someone coming in my office saying the FBI was here. And I thought they were joking possibly, but I looked out the window and saw a lot of FBI agents, so they went from front entrance and just a feeling of shock.
Today, it really makes me angry. I mean, I remember being shocked the day it happened. I remember seeing FBI agents running into our building, chasing down people.
The events of that day are quite clear to me, and it really brings one to realize in this country, you're guilty until proven innocent.
Basically waiting for our morning stand-up meeting we have every morning and hearing the commotion of all these agents coming to the door and, you know, basically being ordered around into the break room without giving any explanation of what's going on or why or who these people were. It took about a minute or two before they even identified themselves as the FBI. The benefit of the doubt was not given to anyone. It was almost, I mean, you want to stand by certain truths about the United States that, you know, you're innocent until you're proven guilty. And it was like, from the minute they walked in that door and the way we were treated as criminals, we were treated as if we weren't even Americans. And it just shocks you sometimes that when you think back and you realize how authority in the wrong hands can, you know, really be, can really take away your freedom.
We were out there trying to help them, and they just really tried to demoralize us.
Contributing to the development of a lot of those concepts and precepts and the architecture and the technical framework for the software. When I heard about the raid, I thought, how weird is this? How ironic is this? Do they want to, what are they doing? And if they, what is the intent? And if they shut us down, could this be purposely done? That we're doing so well to help them that they don't want us to do that well? What is it?
There needs to be some justice in this particular type situation. And somebody out there knows something on exactly what happened to our company and what reasoning and what events led somebody to come actually do something so sinister to our company and to try to impede our progress. And yes, we do believe somebody came in there for the express purpose to acquire our software for illegal means just on the eve of us closing business and having some of the most promising meetings to conclude business that we had ever had in the history of our company.
There you have it. Tough questions in need for answers. Lady Justice has gone missing. Where is she? The RP6 and countless thousands are seeking her out. What you didn't know about the RP6 story, to be continued. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen of America. This is Lamont Banks along with Cliff Stewart, Lisa Stewart, and Jeanette Williams. And we now go to the portion of the show that asks the question and to inform America what you didn't know about the RP6 story. And tonight our focus is that what you didn't know was that IRP attempted to contact Department of Homeland Security contacts. IRP was told that DHS had been informed that the IRP was subject of an investigation. And what you didn't know, they were told not to do business with the IRP6. And Cliff, if I'm not mistaken on that point, this was what we call blackballing these men.
Absolutely. I mean, blackballing, interference with commerce. There's so many different, for lack of a better term, so many different accolades that you give that type of activity. I mean, you as a federal prosecutor, as the FBI, cannot interfere with Congress. That is not a part of your job description.
Absolutely.
The FBI is supposed to do investigations. If they're going to do interviews, they can ask, hey, we're here to ask you some questions about your interaction with this company. But for IRP Solutions to be told by the program manager at DHS that we were in very close working contact with, he was the one delivering the requirements for the customizations on the Silk software, for him to come back and say, you know what, I have to stop talking to IRP Solutions because the FBI, basically a sister federal agency, has told me not to talk to you, not to have any dealings with you because they're doing an investigation. And the FBI has always, since its inception, used intimidation and fear against the American people. That is how they get their results. So to go to a company and say, don't do business with this company, they're in an investigation, and the FBI has told you not to. And then to have the prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch, to go to Philadelphia PD and the Office of the Inspector General in Philadelphia, and to be asked by them, hey, you know, we're about to do business with this company, IRP Solutions. There's an investigation. Give us some information. And they always do their background, their due diligence. Anytime you're dealing with law enforcement, obviously, they're going to do background. They're going to do due diligence. But what was told to IRP Solutions is that every company at some point typically goes under investigation. That's not an issue. The issue that happened is when Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch came back and told Philadelphia that IRP Solutions will be coming under an indictment. You're talking about 6 months before the grand jury that returned the indictment was even impaneled. And, you know, the grand jury that returned the indictment, that's with one witness, one FBI agent, and that's another what you didn't know about the IRP 6 story. But 6 months before the grand jury is impaneled, how do you know
that the grand jury has not even come back with that.
How do you know they're going to come back with an indictment? Those are the type of things that you say, okay, you look at that, and then I'm sure the audience is out there saying, well, hey, that's got to be against the law. Absolutely. Well, why didn't you take it to the judge? We did take it to the judge. This is Judge Christine Arguello of the 10th Circuit. And if anybody doesn't know anything about her now, the one thing you should know is that this is a judge that's not out for justice. This is a judge that has her own agenda.
Well, I'll tell you right now, the fact, ladies and gentlemen of America, make no mistake about this point. If this happened to the IRP6, it can happen to you. The issue with the IRP6 is that they were innocent. They broke no laws. Just like a lot of you folks out there and our listeners across this country, you go to work every day, you do your job, you pay your taxes, you put some pork and beans and hot dogs on the table for your family perhaps or whatever meal that you select. But the bottom line is, regardless of all of that, in the course of your day, in a moment, injustice can raise its head. That's what happened, Cliff, Lisa, Jeanette, with the IRP6. These men were honorable men. They went to work every day. They were fighting to bring a solution to the threat of the homeland of the United States of America, the very blanket and pillow that Mr. Kirsch rests his head on. This is the purpose of what they brought.
That's right, Lamont. I mean, it's just sick. I mean, I think most Americans just believe that, you know, justice will prevail. That's not the case. Well, That's not the case. And even Mr. LeGrand said earlier he was hurt. He said he felt very hurt by how this case was handled. And because he said it was just another example of over-criminalization.
Well,
but I think anybody who is informed about this particular case and the grave injustice that took place feels exactly the same way, hurt. But also, I feel angry. And there's an unsettled feeling that comes with this because it can happen, like you said, to anyone.
To anyone. And, you know, when you sit back and think about, and ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of what you didn't know going on across America. It's not as simple as what you see on television or what you read in an article or in a newspaper article or report. This is what you didn't know. What you didn't know is that, was it legal for a prosecutor to step outside of the role of prosecutor and basically blackball someone according to the Constitution of the United States? Is this the presumption of innocence lies with the defendant? I am presumed innocent, so any business I got going on with the Inspector General in Philadelphia, any pending business with the Department of Homeland Security, any of that, I am presumed innocent according to the Constitution of the United States. Lisa, it sounds like that page has been torn from the book of the Constitution.
Lamont, I think our criminal justice system has completely disregarded the fact that we're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. In fact, it seems to work a lot closer to the lines of you're guilty until you're proven innocent. You don't see people saying that I'm going to keep my mind open and say that these people are innocent until something has been proven. No, they come in with their predeterminations and their predispositions on what they believe a person is and who they believe they are and what they believe they probably have done, and they go based on that, as opposed to giving each and every citizen of this country the right that is entitled them, and that they should be treated as if they are innocent until somebody proves otherwise.
Well, following these actions, what you didn't know is that FBI Special Supervisor Agent Gene Anderson sent correspondence to an IRP Solutions vendor stating, we, the FBI, are unable to assist you in this matter, and therefore no investigation will be conducted by the Federal Bureau of Investigations. However, the FBI has made it a matter of record. We feel this case would be best handled civilly and have noted that you have initiated legal action against the company and Mr. Harper. America, did you hear that? Lisa, did you hear that?
I heard that.
And that has been one of the initial issues on the table is if the FBI can come to the conclusion this is a civil case and can send this letter to the complainant saying, you know what, you're barking up the wrong tree, you're on a witch hunt, go to civil court And the IRP6 has never contended that they do not owe these staffing companies
money.
But the issue is, even the FBI comes back and said, this is a civil matter, take it up with civil court. How do you go forward and turn this into a criminal, federal criminal case?
Well, the key is here. The statement is clear. It needs no interpretation, ladies and gentlemen of America. She said, Jean Anderson, she was not only an agent that just came out of the academy, special supervisor agent, Jean Anderson sent correspondence stating they could no longer assist in this matter, which means that is their conclusion. And you make the statement that the IRP6 are guilty of a crime. Somebody help me with that.
That's right. You forgot. Debt was a crime. Remember?
Yeah, that's exactly what they're that's exactly how they're treating it. They're basically, and see, that is why all of you listeners out there, you better understand where we're coming from, because imagine you have debt with a company, your credit card, your car payment, your mortgage. That debt, if the federal government feels like attacking you and say, well, you haven't paid your mortgage because you lost your job, you're going through a divorce, you have some medical bills that have really drained you. The federal government can come and say you never had an intention to pay those bills when you made that bill. Therefore, they are contending that that is fraud and you can be prosecuted by it. So if you think that the IRP 6 case does not apply to you, that it does not pertain to you, that the federal government cannot come after you, you better think again, because this case has set precedents that debt can be criminalized. They can now come back and say, well, there's a case in the 10th Circuit against the company that we dub as the IRP6, and we prosecuted them and convicted them, so now we want to convict everybody who has debt. That is what this case does. That's why you better get out there, you better vote, you better fight, and make sure that the laws are clear and that the ones that should not be passed do not get passed.
That's right.
No, absolutely, ladies and gentlemen. And again, this is what you didn't know. And we've only covered a page or two. This question and this statement is just the beginning. As we try to, Cliff, as we said earlier, we ask the tough questions. We're finding in the early going of this is that the questions are not that tough. And the answers are not that difficult to understand, that they are answers of complete ridiculous form, if you will, by the prosecution, the state attorney, all of these things. I don't have to be a lawyer to figure that out. Ladies and gentlemen, to be continued, what you didn't know about the IRP6. Join us next week for our next segment as we dig deeper into the corruption and the wrongful conviction of the IRP6. And I'll tell you right now, the IRP6 and every show that we do on this program is dedicated to the IRP6. They are David Banks, Gary Walker, Demetrius Harper, Kendrick Barnes, Dave Zappolo, and Clinton Stewart. There are some people responsible for their wrongful conviction, and they are guilty. And Lisa, who are their names?
Okay, we have U.S. Attorney John Walsh, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, Assistant U.S. Attorney Sunita Hazra, Attorney Greg Goldberg, Federal Judge Christine Arguello, Appellate Judge Jerome Holmes, Appellate Judge Bobby Baldock, Appellate Judge Harris Hart, Federal Judge R. Brooke Jackson, Magistrate Judge Craig Schaefer, Court Reporter Darlene Martinez, FBI Agent John Smith, FBI Agent Robert Moen, Former Federal Agent John Epke, Former Federal Agent Gary Hilberry, Attorney Thomas Goodread, Attorney Clifford Barnard, Attorney Thomas Richard, Attorney Robert Berger, Attorney Mitchell Baker, Attorney Boston Stanton Jr., Attorney Rick Kornfeld, Attorney Mark Garagos, Susan Holland of ETI Professionals, and Samuel K. Thurman.
And thank you for that. And folks, if you're wondering who those folks are, perpetrators of justice that are guilty of every level of fraud and deception that they could bring on the American people and on the IRP6, who hold the key, Cliff, as we've talked earlier, hold the key to ISIS, to stopping ISIS, and terrorist groups across this country that make attempts
to bring danger to the homeland of the United States of America. How critical and unseemly, if you will, of the actions of this government that has gone after six patriots of America to do these things is unheard of.
That's right. It absolutely leaves you, just stupefied that something like this could happen. You wouldn't think that something like this could happen in America. Just like in the earlier clip where we heard Kim Barnes of the IRP6 saying that you think that your government is going to abide by its laws, that you're innocent until proven guilty, that your process, the rights that you have, that they're going to be upheld until it comes after you, and then you realize everything that I had was a fallacy. That I've been looking through, a dark glass all this time at the American government. And that's why we're here, to ensure that the listeners, as many of the American people that we can possibly reach, that they understand that your government can come after you unless you stop.
For no reason. And Cliff, my story, wrongfully convicted here in this state. Injustice is colorblind, unfortunately. It doesn't say anything. It will get anyone. It'll get a mother. It'll take a mother from their children. And it'll take a grandmother from her home and knitting and doing whatever she's doing. And it'll take children out of the arms of parents. This is the cancer of injustice. And unless we get involved and say, well, that doesn't involve me, I'm not too concerned about that, it's high time that you get concerned. Because this is not the only, make no mistake about it, Lisa, the IRP6 is not the only one that have been railroaded by the system of this country and this judicial system that has gone awry.
Absolutely not. And anyone who stands by and says, well, it's never happened to me, wait long enough.
Well, you
give it some time.
And you heard what Gary said, Lisa. He said that he thought it was a joke.
Oh, yeah.
He's looking outside the window out of his office as he continues to work and plan and work hard, as all six of them did, to bring this software to the point that to protect the nation. Ladies and gentlemen, are you hearing me? Developing software to keep you, your children, who are in bed tonight for another day at school tomorrow, to keep America and our children safe. And America says, we'd like to give you a thank you card. What size cell would you like?
And you don't even get that much courtesy. Here is your 8x11.
Well, there you go.
Your closet.
I stand corrected.
here's your closet down in Florida, Colorado.
You don't get a choice. Ladies and gentlemen, this is AJC Radio, a special edition of Spotlight on Capitol Hill. We thank Ron LeGrand for his service to the United States and to the American people. What you didn't know about the IRP6 will continue. Have a good night, ladies and gentlemen. And Cliff, before we go there, Cliff, thank the folks who are responsible for this program.
Yes, we want to say thank you to everyone in the chat rooms, on the phones. Sorry we didn't have time. We see some of you are in queue, don't have time to take those calls tonight. We're wrapping up. Call in next time. We will get to you. Also, want to say thank you to our production crew, Captain Kyle and Dustin Jackson of K&D Productions, helping out Ill Skillers Girl and the Honeycomb Kids. Also, we want to say thank you to the research team. They give us accurate and up-to-date information so we can pass that on to you. And to the truth, we know you're out there. We appreciate it.
All right, folks. Good night. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We'll see you next time here on AJC Radio. I'm Lamont Banks for Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, Jeanette Williams. Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen of America, what is going on when innocent men get locked away? Ladies and gentlemen, have you stopped to ask the question, where is justice? It's far away. The IRP6, David Banks, Gary Walker, Demetrius Harper, Kendrick Barnes, Dave Zappolo, and Clinton Stewart have pondered that question for 3 years. Where is justice? What you didn't know about the IRP6 case is the question. We will deliver those answers on our new segment, What You Didn't Know About the IRP6. We will seek and search for justice. We will ask the tough questions. We will demand answers as justice lays idle in the streets of America. We look
for the answer. What you didn't know about the IRP6 case starts right now.
Well, on the morning of 2005, the day of the FBI raid, I remember someone coming in my office saying the FBI was here. And I thought they were joking, possibly, but I looked out the window and saw a lot of FBI agents, so they went to the front entrance and just a feeling of shock.
Today, it really makes me angry. I mean, I remember being shocked the day it happened. I remember seeing FBI agents running into our building, chasing down people.
The events of that day are quite clear to me, and it really brings one to realize in this country, you're guilty until proven innocent.
Basically, waiting for our morning stand-up meeting we have every morning, and hearing the commotion of all these agents coming to the door, and, you know, basically being ordered around into the break room without giving any explanation of what's going on or why or who these people were. It took it took about a minute or two before they even identified themselves as the FBI. The benefit of the doubt was not given to anyone. It was almost, I mean, you want to stand by certain truths about the United States that, you know, you're innocent until you're proven guilty. And it was like, from the minute they walked in that door and the way we were treated as criminals, we were treated as if, we were treated as if we weren't even Americans. And it just shocks you sometimes that when you think back and you realize how authority in the wrong hands can, you know, really take away your freedom.
We were out there trying to help them, and they just really tried to demoralize us.
Contributing to the development of a lot of those concepts and precepts and the architecture and the technical framework for the software. When I heard about the raid, I thought, how weird is this? How ironic is this? Do they want to, what are they doing? And if they, what is the intent? And if they shut us down, could this be purposely done? That we're doing so well to help them that they don't want us to do that well? What is it?
There needs to be some justice in this particular type situation. And somebody out there knows something on exactly what happened to our company and what reasoning and what events led somebody to come actually do something so sinister to our company and to try to impede our progress. And yes, we do believe somebody came in there for the express purpose to acquire our software for illegal means just on the eve of us closing business and having some of the most promising meetings to conclude business that we had ever had in the history of our company.
There you have it. Tough questions in need for answers. Lady Justice has gone missing. Where is she? The IRP6 and countless thousands are seeking her out. What you didn't know about the IRP6 story to be continued.